Welcome into another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, I am chatting with Ed Moya. He is the senior market analyst over at Oanda. Now, Ed, let's recap and balance out two recent data points, I guess we can call them, that relate to the consumer. And just to recap, the consumer has really been the one aspect of the U.S. economy that has kept the economy afloat. It's what's held up some of the GDP numbers and the overall economic data from really falling into recessionary territory. Business spending is not picking up at all. It's really lagging, and the consumer is the one that's been supporting the economy. But these two recent data points, one coming from retail sales, which disappointed. They were softer than expected. This is obviously a negative for the consumer. But then recent bank earnings have been stronger than expected to kick off earnings season. This is a sign that the consumer is actually stronger than what some people would think. How are you balancing out these two data points when it comes to judging the overall health of the consumer?
Well, I think both data points are, you know, definitely highlighting that there is some weakness trickling into the U.S. consumer. And when we take a look at, let's talk about earnings season first, you know, we're on day two. Yesterday, J.P. Morgan, very strong report. You know, out of all the banks, I think J.P. had the best report, then followed up by Bank of America, who kind of mirrored J.P.'s optimism about the U.S. consumer. It's healthy. You're seeing all the bank stocks relatively perform well. Goldman, they've had a little bit of a harder earnings start, but I think you're going to continue to expect strong bank results. And the underlying picture is that the U.S. consumer is still relatively pretty good right now, according to the banks. And a lot of that, though, will depend on continued worries about the trade war, which you could see that it definitely, you know, when we talk about the economic data, yes, retail sales, that was the big story for today. That pretty much for many is going to be the key data point that is going to solidify those expectations for the Fed to ease at the end of the month. When we take a look at some of the other data points, you know, the U.S. manufacturing sector has had their worst readings in the decade. They've been in contraction territory for a couple months now. And we're seeing that kind of also spill over to the services sector. So the ISM readings are showing weaker employment. So as we start to see broader weakness, it is definitely going to hit the consumer. And that is going to kind of weigh on that risk appetite. And, you know, you're going to continue to see these downward revisions with growth. Everyone is at the beginning of the week was talking about the IMF's downgrades to global growth forecast. And, you know, despite everything right now, the U.S., if we still see 1% growth, that still is, you know, a lot better than a lot of the rest of the world. And you're probably going to see some optimism remain in place for U.S. equities if we have a much more accommodative Fed, and if we do get some progress on this trade war, which everyone is now calling Friday's, you know, temporary solution, really just a Band-Aid that will, you know, have everyone focused to that Asia-Pacific summit when President Trump and Xi will meet, you know, so that's mid-November, around November 16th, 17th, I believe.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of already back and forth regarding that trade deal, the phase one trade deal, which hasn't been signed. So I think it's even hard to call it a deal right now because we just don't know how that's going to play out. But boy, oh boy, did it ever help jump these markets. But you even mentioned where this leaves the Fed. A lot of the talk now about the Fed is revolving around their QE program, that they're not calling a QE program, and their continued actions in the repo market, which have actually expanded on the Fed's balance sheet. This is going to be a key talking point for the Fed, but then also the potential of a rate cut. Is this going to be, do you think, a main driver heading into that Fed meeting more so than any of this data, considering just how flat the markets are today with this almost good and bad consumer data?
I think that, and the Fed for the most part has always said they're data dependent. But I think, we oftentimes get so fixated on how's labor doing, how's inflation performing. And while those are, the key responsibilities for the Fed, market disruption is the other one. And I think that the Fed is well aware. If you listen to all the policy speakers, I'd say with the exception of two dissenters, I think they're pretty much all on board that market disruption is something that they're going to avoid if possible. And they're well aware that if they don't deliver more easing, you're going to see that possibly happen. And they want to fix the Treasury curve. And if they don't deliver a rate cut, you're going to see a violent reaction in the bond markets. And I think that's pretty much forcing them into deliver another rate cut. And what's to say December is not going to be a fourth consecutive one. So I think October is good to go. And they probably got a couple more cuts next year also. So I don't anticipate us going to 0%. I think that the economy is still strong, and unless we saw a couple of terrible events happen, complete disaster with trade, not with just China, but with Europe, and also there might be military conflicts that are gaining traction. That it would really need to deliver, I think, an end of any economic optimism to derail the belief that we should start to see the stimulative effects help keep this record long expansion going. But there's right now it seems like we're so geopolitically focused that we could easily be blindsided by any other market surprise here.
Yeah, boy, oh boy, geopolitics really has its hands on these markets and also on the central banks. And when it comes to the Fed, it's also almost a playing catch up to what other central banks are doing and, well, really reading from the same playbook. Let's also talk about what's going on over in the UK, where we have the pound that is seeing the greatest volatility ever since the last referendum. This is all on the back of a little bit more optimism when it comes to Brexit, but again, we don't actually have a Brexit deal. So this volatility seems like it's here to stay, but again, on the back of geopolitics. What are your comments on that volatility in the pound?
Well, I think one of the key risks to the global economy has been Brexit. Now, we really haven't talked about it much because it seemed that we were on a path of just having Article 50 extended, and this is just going to get dragged out a lot longer. But October had some very interesting price action because we actually started to see a tremendous amount of trade flows come back. And Brexit is important because Brexit affects all of Europe. It affects trade deals. It's going to really, when you take a look at the British pound, it almost mirrors the euro dollar. Because right now, everything is tightly focused on Brexit. And the prospects of this no deal, this hard exit, where they just are unable to reach an agreement on how to orderly leave the European Union, we saw so much volatility where markets were extremely pessimistic that Prime Minister Johnson was going to be able to get anything done. It was pretty surprising that just about a week ago, it was on the 10th, that there was this possible pathway that there was going to be a deal soon. Markets were not pricing that at all. Then saw that there were compromises given. So we saw the British pound go from 122 all the way to 127. There was some skepticism, but then it just surged all the way back up towards that 128 level. Now, the latest developments are, talks are stalling. I don't think anyone that has their, that if you follow how party lines are and where they need to be for a deal to get agreed upon. I don't think there's a strong chance that we'll see a deal reached. But because the markets weren't pricing any optimism, we saw some of that greatest volatility since Brexit referendum in 2016. So it's an exciting time because now we're finally seeing like some tremendous swings here with cable. I think though the way politics works out, you really don't see anything agreed upon until that final moment. And with Brexit, what's been so annoying is that they kept pushing that benchmark. You know, we were supposed to have an agreement months ago, and then it got extended, and now it looks like we're going to have possibly another extension. But like leading up to this weekend, tomorrow is the EU summit, and that's when they were supposed to have a deal agreed upon. And if not, the BEN Act, which is going to pretty much force Boris Johnson's hand into seeking that extension if a deal is not agreed upon, and he might even resist that. So there's so many potential scenarios on how this will unfold. But the one thing that's for sure is that the pound's roller coaster ride is going to continue.
Yeah, volatility. It's really creeping into almost every market that we're watching. And a lot of that is because of just all this uncertainty around politics around the world and central banks. So I don't know. It's a tough time right now to be a, at least short-term investor. And that's why I think it's important to understand the long-term trends and really understand where these markets seem to be going, even outside of just central banks and all their tinkering on the edges. Ed, great chatting with you. Everyone, if you want to follow along with what Ed is writing over at Oanda on a daily basis, I will post a link below this interview. Have a great rest of your week there, Ed.
Thank you. You too.